Do you want to be a great physical therapist or physical therapist assistant? Of course you do. You want to help your patients. Where do you want to do it? Well, that's personal to you. Let your PT or PTA license take you where you want to go. Travel physical therapy positions in all 50 states and DC in all settings. Where? AUREUSmedical.com. That's AUREUSmedical.com. Go there and pick out what's important to you. Let your license take your career where you want it to go. Aureus Medical Staffing, AUREUSmedical.com.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pinecast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
you. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the show. This is PT Pinecast, a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories. The best conversations happen at happy hour. Well, welcome to ours. I'm Jimmy McKay. I'm your host, broadcasting live here from the Aureus Medical Studios, also known as my living room. Find them online at AUREUSmedical.com. Leaders in travel physical therapy. If you'd like your PT license to take you about the country, you can do that. All settings, all 50 states and DC. Check them out online. Again, go to that website, AUREUSmedical.com. Subscribe to the show, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and now videocasting, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, at PT Pinecast on the socials. Great show for you tonight. We're talking cannabis. Yeah, that. We're going to answer, what's a cannabinoid? Did he even say that right? How you can educate your patients about cannabis the right way? And what does the PT research look like? Plus, laws and legal issues PTs need to consider. You want to do it the right way? We're going to figure it out tonight. Now, let's get down to business. Our first guest is a physical therapist and founder of PhD 420, a not-for-profit organization specializing in cannabis education and research. Second is a physical therapist, an associate dean at AT Still University, and an educator for healthcare providers and patients about cannabis. Please welcome Jeff Conan, Jim Ferris are on the show.
Hi, Jimmy.
Thanks, Jim.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir.
Talking cannabis. But the first question, we get the hard questions, the hard-hitting journalism out of the way early. First question, always the hardest, what are we drinking tonight?
I've got what we call a dusty blonde from my brewery, Jimmy,
Ooh. We have an old brewery? You brewing beer at the house or what?
Absolutely. At the house, you got to keep it going. So,
I like that. Jeff, how about you?
Well, I'm second class. I don't have a winery. But I do have a nice dry red Malbec from Argentina.
I like that. I'm doing the Sloop Brewing Juice Bomb IPA, and we've now got our own pint glass. See, I don't have a brewery, but I do have a pint glass, the official PT Pintcast PT pint glass. And it has my favorite line from Game of Thrones, which was Tyrion Lannister, "I drink and I know things." That's what Tyrion does. You can pick these up. We got sets right now on sale, I believe, at ptpintcast.com. The first round brought to you by our friends from Owens Recovery Science. They're a single source for PTs looking for certification in personalized blood flow restriction rehabilitation training and the equipment, clinical practice. You want to apply it there properly. We've got the information there at the website, owensrecoveryscience.com. All right, let's get down to business. This is a topic that before we hit record, I mentioned, I think the first time I ever saw it in a presentation was probably 4 or 5 years ago. I went deep into the pharmacology. But now we're starting to hit mainstream. I mean, people are starting to talk about this, not only on chat rooms or amongst friends. We're talking about this on the street. Let's start and make sure we're using the right words. I like to start and make sure we're using the right terminology. So who can tell me what is a cannabinoid? Am I even saying that right?
You're pretty close. Pretty close. I mean, it's a cannabinoid, that's all right. A cannabinoid is one of many compounds in the cannabis plant. And so the ones that are commonly known are, THC or Delta 9 THC, CBDs or cannabidiol. And there's terpenes, which also have a physiological effect, and some isoflavones that kind of go into that. There's over 100 plus cannabinoids in the cannabis plant. And so it's just one of the chemicals that are in cannabis.
All right. So now we got that out of the way. I want to make sure we start from the start. So different types of cannabinoids. I screwed it up again. I got it. All right. We're looking at endo, phyto, and synthetic. And I'm only reading that from notes. You guys understand this. Talk about the different types and what they do when they're inside the human body. Let's do that.
Oh. Sure. So those, you know, the terminology is the key. If everyone starts with the foundation of the terminology, this actually is not that difficult to learn. Endo, inside the body, right? Just like you have endorphins, you have similar types of cannabinoids that are in your body that are naturally produced under certain circumstances. When we take them from the plant to introduce them into the body, they're phytocannabinoids. And when we make them, either in a true pharmaceutical lab or in Jimmy McKay's garage, those are synthetic cannabinoids, right? And so obviously, you know what's coming out of the ground naturally. You know what's in your body naturally. You don't always know what synthetically is being made unless it's coming off of a label.
Perfect. All right. So let's talk about why people would use these products. Why are people using these? For what effect and in what way? And then we'll get into how that interacts with PT and then also legal issues and how you can do this. So why are we interested in this as a society? What is it good for?
You know, Jimmy, this people have been using cannabis products since back in the Stone Age. They find traces of cannabis and cannabinoids, you know, back in that time. And so they've been using it for a number of different things. But, you know, bringing it all up to today, in fact, it was legal tender in the United States in the early 1800s. And it was the number three cash crop in the United States in the 1800s from an industrial and textile point of view, too. But, you know, bringing it up today, why are people using, what are they doing it for? A lot of folks, there was pain would be the number one reason that folks are looking at it. There's some indications for other issues related to multiple sclerosis and a couple of other conditions where folks are reporting positive benefits from using a cannabis product. Now, when I say cannabis, we've got to start thinking that we're not always talking about THC, which is the intoxicating substance in cannabis. And so, and some folks use it, you know, because it gets them high. You just be truthful about it, you know?
Sometimes we just do things because it makes us feel good. I don't know about you guys, but sometimes we do.
Yeah, and there's that euphoric sense from THC. The CBDs have a very strong antioxidant effect in some other areas. And like I mentioned before, the terpenes kind of assist both THC and CBD when they're in the body. So again, for a number of conditions, sleep or insomnia, it tends to help with that. And in a number of other areas, and depending upon which state of the union you're in, depends right on whether you can buy it or not for a certain condition. And Jeff can talk, you know, more about why people around. I'm on the West Coast, kind of, sort of. I'm in Arizona. Jeff's in Florida. So we kind of cover the realm of the population. Yeah,
you've got to know where someone is standing to understand how they're able to access it. So, Jeff, you know, where are you looking at this?
Yeah, so if you divide up the laws, federal versus state, it's a good place to start. And so the real question is maybe not why people are using it, but why weren't they not using it or still not using it? And you date back to 1970. And Nixon was president, and his administration passed what's called the Controlled Substance Act. And in the Controlled Substance Act, they classified various drugs, and they put them into schedules, Schedule 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Schedule 1 are drugs that are the most harmful with the least benefits. Cocaine, heroin, LSD. Well, marijuana got put in a Schedule 1. And so from that day forward, 1970, and it wasn't designed to be there permanently, temporarily, but lo and behold, it's still there. So from that day forward, it's been federally illegal. And what's really interesting is that fall of 2018, President passed what's called the Farm Bill, or something known as the Hemp Bill. They had a whole lot of things in there to help farmers with their crops to create increased exportation. One of them was to recognize a form of the cannabis plant where the majority of THC is pulled out. So it's, we call it 0.3%, not 3%, 0.3%. And as Jim likes to say, nobody knows how we came up with his number. We really don't. But the plant that has less than 0.3% is hemp. That's the definition of hemp. Still the same plant. And it comes from the same ground and the same crop.
It looks identical. Jimmy, if you filled up the back of a truck and you were exporting hemp, you're a farmer, and you were sending it out to California for someone to use hemp to make rope, gasoline, perfumes, oils, papers, lots of things, right? You get pulled over and you pull up the back of that truck, you don't know if it's hemp or the entire cannabis plant. We don't have really mechanisms on the street to assess this. But then what's happened is over time, the pressure of the public, the people, in N of one, another N of one, in N of one, and said, hey, I've taken this, and you've done nothing to fix my fibromyalgia or my migraines. And I don't know anything, but this works, and I feel better. And whatever the condition is, we're not allowed to say by the rules of the FDA that any form of this actually has been shown to scientifically prove benefits of health conditions. But anecdotally, through a lot of ends of one, we've seen that. So through that pressure, states have passed various forms of legislation, but it's still illegal federally, right? So if you see a doctor who wants to give you medical marijuana, for example, in what we call low dose, which we'll talk more about hopefully, they can't prescribe it for you, because that would be like prescribing heroin or LSD. It's still Schedule One. The legal term is recommend. So that's one of the most important things, right? So if you're a physical therapist and your patient even asks you about this, do not ever use the word prescribe, use the word recommend, but even say, I recommend that you go see a physician who's allowed to recommend this to you. And right. With that said, we have state laws. We have 33 state laws that allow for medicinal marijuana, including and plus Washington, D.C., and not a one of them have the same laws. If you think it's bad enough with reciprocity with a PT license, you should look at the conditions for cannabis approval. So, for example, Connecticut approves some almost 40 medical conditions for the purposes of a recommendation of medical marijuana, low-dose THC. In Florida, where I am, only 10 are approved. So if you live in Connecticut and you come down here for 2 months as a snowbird, you might be out of luck with what's worked to help you feel better for 10 months, because in Florida, we don't allow it here.
Wow.
So this is what we have amongst the 33 states. All across the board, we have a whole different set of rules for everybody.
All right, well, let's go back to that scenario. Let's say you are recommended and you obtain low-dose THC marijuana in Connecticut, and you travel with it. Let's say you're a snowboarder, you drive to Florida. Like, no good? Right, because you're crossing these imaginary lines. Wow, this is a headache.
Maybe, maybe not, right? Because the rules are gray everywhere. So I'm like one of the only healthcare nerds that follows TSA on Twitter, because I travel a lot, and when I go give presentations on this, I like to have products shipped there so I can teach people how to use the application of tinctures versus topicals and how to read labels and things of that nature. But for a while, we weren't allowed. You couldn't ship through the mail. That was a federal offense. We're shipping a Schedule One drug through a federal offense. We couldn't bring it to the airport. And despite the fact that the TSA agents don't know exactly what it is, they have the right to take away everything that they want. And then TSA passed the rule that said, you know what, we're really here just to look out for danger, bombs, guns, things like that. We're not going to bother you. If you're going to take your THC and your CBD on the airplane, that's fine. In fact, they now have kiosks, right? And every airport has a kiosk for a CBD or a hemp stand for some products. But I could actually take my medical marijuana on my plane in Tampa Airport right now and fly. But what I don't know is when I land,
right,
the state I land in, what the rules are there. And wow. So it's still really, really great. These are the questions we don't have the exact answers to. I talk to a lot of the professional sports teams and college teams that travel, and they ask questions about this. And transportation is just such a gray area. And even if you're the provider, you know, are you allowed to store the product for the patient? Or does the patient have to keep it on their person? Can they take it from home to the clinic? There's a lot of, you know, unknown gray areas still.
I feel like it depends is the answer here as we take it from PT school, move on. Well, Jeff, you mentioned educating, and in your intro mentioned PhD 420. Talk about that.
Yeah. So, you know, this is an amazing story. It actually has a little bit to do with Jim. I was on the road teaching concussion workshops, and we were doing a workshop at AT Still University in Arizona, ironically, and it was a physical therapist from San Francisco. He asked the question about post-concussion syndrome. And he basically said, hey, a lot of the patients that I treat in San Francisco, they routinely, daily smoke low-dose marijuana. And if I'm going to have them come in for a concussion assessment, and I'm going to look at their memory recall and balance and a bunch of other things, should I tell them before the visit not to smoke? And I'm thinking, not as an expert, but just, you know, lowest level of common sense. Of course, get a good baseline evaluation. It's, their system is clear. And I thought it was an easy answer. And I know Senior was about to go to the next slide, and he said, wait, I got another question. He said, what about the people that don't smoke, but their symptoms post-concussion are not getting better, and they have headaches, and they can't concentrate, and they can't sleep at night, and they have anxiety? Should I encourage them to go try some? I didn't have an answer, and I wasn't comfortable giving an answer. Why? Because I don't have adult use, which we're trying to get away from the term recreational and refer to it as adult use. We don't have that in Florida. It's not part of a daily practice that I've ever been involved in, but it's part of his. And so that led me to look into the answer to that, and that got me deeper and deeper and deeper and saying, wow, there's something going on here, really recently especially, and why are we completely ignoring this? Because in those 33 states where it's legal medicinally, this is part of your patient clientele. And in the other states where it's legal from a recreational standpoint and growing from some dozen to maybe two dozen within the next year, it's really important for us as healthcare providers to know, what is this patient putting in their body that might be altering what I'm doing to treat them? For a good or a bad reason, I should know this. And so that's where we developed this non-for-profit company that was designed to start to do some studies, start to learn about knowledge and perception that providers have compared to students that are coming out today. What are the faculty teaching them? And then also really look at some of ways like we're doing here tonight. How can we go about and educate our colleagues? Because that's what this really is. Jim and I will tell you, you know, we've become, I'm going to say, honestly, if there was a scale, Jimmy, we're probably advocates towards looking at this more and, and seeing if the science backs up what we're saying anecdotally. But the truth of the matter is there is something out there, and the patients aren't waiting for us to find the science. They're finding solutions.
Yeah.
And you know, when you treat a patient, all they want to do is get better and feel better. And that's what they're reporting in this. And I can't prove it because it's their word versus mine, but they're spending a lot of money for over-the-counter products.
Right.
And they're swearing it feels better. So it's a long story to how we got about this. And now Jim and I have, and others have collaborated with the PhD 420. You know, it's a play on words. We have some fun with that from that perspective, but it really, really is about educating. We try to get to as many conferences and forums and platforms as we can to talk about the terminology, talk about the laws, talk about impacts, what we do as professionals.
Wow. Other good resources. We got the website on the screen, phd420.org, for what you guys offer. Any other places that you guys recommend people getting quality information that they can trust?
So, yeah, I've been asked this a number of times when we present to student organizations, Jimmy, and you know, I always tell them, you know, start with PubMed. Yeah. And just do cannabis or CANNABI with an asterisk and, you know, capital and whatever you're looking for, and stuff will show up. But that's probably the best place to look for good research evidence to back things up. There's a number of sites that also stay up on the literature as well. That are related to cannabis and marijuana, but that's the main one right there. I know, Jeff, you got any others that?
I would agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'd set an alert on there. So the key is this: there's actually a lot of research on various cannabinoids in the body, use with animals, but it's not in the literature that you and I read every day, right? And so you have to get out there and you have to do some searches, and then see where is the evidence in other areas and how does that perhaps play a role in the future of healthcare. But I would agree. At one time I put in the word cannabis in a Google alert. Yeah, I couldn't have made a bigger mistake because I'd wake up in the morning to, you know, multiple pages of just garbage. And that's the real question. You know, how do you decipher? Because if you're using Google or Bing or whatever else, how do you decipher what's real and what's not that's out there? And it's really important. And it brings up a point that, probably a pet peeve of both of ours, I would say. But in 2019 in Chicago at the House of Delegates, there is an RC on the table. RC 6719. I say it in my sleep every night. And I sat there in the gallery for about 45 minutes and watched the debate go back and forth. And I'm going to read you the exact wording. RC 6719 was to develop educational resources on the use of cannabis or cannabis-based products for health-related conditions. After 45 minutes of debate, it passed. It passed with a vote of 204 to 198.
Wow.
I believe that was 50.5% to 49.5%. But to this moment, nothing has been done. No call has been put out to put a group together, a work group to develop these resources. And the debate on the floor was, we don't want to do this because it should be each individual physical therapist's responsibility to look at the literature and make decisions. But the truth of the matter was, the facts are that the literature is difficult to interpret right now. It's loose. And you have to really do a good job deciphering through what's fact versus fiction. And so we thought, we're in favor, this would be a great idea, put a work group together and come up with at least a position paper or some standard resources that at least as a baseline or a foundation, we all could be on the same page. Right now, we couldn't be any further from on a standard page of understanding, not even educating, but just understanding on our own basis. And you can't really, you have a responsibility to educate your patients, but you can't do it accurately until you yourself are educated.
You're educated, right.
Jimmy, one of the things that related to cannabis research is that in order to do research with cannabis right now, because it's a Schedule I drug, your research has to be designed to show that there's an adverse effect. Period. You can't see if the cannabis will actually be positive in the treatment of any condition in your proposal to get funding or to get
rule out a negative effect.
No, you can't just rule out a negative. You have to say we think it has this negative effect, so we're gonna use it and look at it. And not only that, the cannabis that you can use legally in the United States is horrible, just bad. And there's been lawsuits against the one university who will remain nameless that they're growing junk. It has mold. It has junk in it that nobody would even use.
I want to name it because the federal government has placed a restriction and they've only allowed one place in the United States so far to have what's called a grow, to the plants to grow. It's housed at, and it's not their fault, but it's housed at the University of Mississippi. And so anybody who gets approval, which is not easy, it's a lot of money and a lot of approvals through the federal government to do a cannabis-related study.
To get a sample.
Has to use their plant. Now, two things about that. When Jim said it's horrible, people who have gotten grants to use it have sued them in return because the product was so bad and it got people sick. And they won the lawsuits against the government who gave them the actual product in the methods, right? The second thing is that if I were to say, hey, let's do a study on beer or let's do a study on coffee, but you're only allowed to use one bean or one brew for every single study we do to say if it works or it's not. It's crazy. It's silly. But the regulations are still federally run. And so not only that, but if you're doing research in certain facilities, you have to be careful because your facility might not allow you to do that research because it's a Schedule I drug. They don't want you to do LSD or heroin research, and marijuana falls in that same group. And so there's barriers to this. But here's the kicker. The government has the single only patent and they have identified CBD as being a neuroprotective agent. So they themselves know. So this is a real political issue now more than anything else. And what we're really, really saying is we're advocating to change the schedule to make Schedule I marijuana come down to a Schedule V, which they've done with the hemp, the CBD, basically. They pulled it out of there. But all of it needs to be pulled out so we can study it. Okay. Really, really important because it's not perfect. It's not like there's no short-term or long-term side effects, which we can talk about. But the truth is that it's not as bad as everybody thinks. Do you know how many overdoses are recorded on history from THC? Zero.
There's been zero deaths.
Zero.
Related to overdose because of, go ahead, Jeff, because of?
So the way it works, the way these cannabinoids work, both endo and phyto, is they bind to the receptors in your body. There's the receptor type 1 and type 2 without getting into the details of the physiology and what's called the endocannabinoid system. Well, these receptors are not located in the brainstem. So regardless of how much you intake in your body, you will not overdose to the point where you have cardiorespiratory failure because the receptors are not located in that system. And so this is the reason why. It's also part of the reason why some people would argue that marijuana is an addictive drug. It's not been proven to be chemically addictive as a gateway drug, meaning you don't take this and say, oh, this isn't enough. Now I need to get on something stronger. That's not the case. In fact, you could argue it's quite the opposite, because one area that the literature is strong in, and it's getting stronger now, is looking at using THC as reducing people on opioid addictions.
Yeah,
it's fascinating. And I'm not going to sit here and say it works in every single case and every person. There are a couple studies that are really well designed in states where they see a larger portion of overdoses, and they're allowed to use medicinal marijuana as a way to wean people off. And really simply, if you look at it, you come in and you're admitted to the hospital and you have this opioid addiction. And what they do is they then load you up with THC. So you have that same euphoric feeling. Well, what happens is, you know, when you get rid of your opioids and you feel bad and you have to go back and get on them, well, they wean you off the opioids, but they keep the THC. So you still feel euphoric. You don't have that withdrawal sensation. And then gradually they wean you off the THC. Now, there's still relapses in the studies, but they have a higher success rate of weaning people off and keeping them off.
Gotcha.
And it might be an area in the future, because we don't have any other good solutions for opioid addictions right now.
And those are a nice few studies that are recent, too.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you asked me earlier in the show, Jimmy, that what are some other conditions that people might take cannabinoids for? And the one thing that got me super interested in this was related to cannabidiol or CBDs related to epilepsy and those types of seizures. And, you know, when I saw a story of a young kid who was having seizures like 12 times a day, and their parents got him on THC with a little bit of, I'm sorry, on CBD with a little THC in it. And these seizures went down to 2 per day. Then they went down to 1 per day. And now the child is functional. I was like, man, I have got to get this word out. We've got to do more about it. And, you know, I've been teaching pharmacology for about 11 years before Jeff and I sat down and said, hey, how can we work together on this? And I always taught a little bit about alternative and complementary medicines in there, which involved, you know, cannabis and THC. But it's, you know, it's just crazy what people think about the plant versus what the plant can actually do and what it provides. There's a stigma, I think, still in America that started in the 70s with the Nixon administration. And even back then, you talked about where can we go to find evidence. There's been five major studies done by the United States government to show that there was something wrong with cannabis. And they were large commission studies done by large groups of doctors and physicians in America and by the Army. And each one of these studies found that it was actually helpful for a number of different things. And so the administrations of the time took those studies and just kind of slid them under the table and never talked about them.
It sounds like we need more research, but it's a little bit hindered right now in terms of the stuff that you're talking about out of the sample, the quality that they're able to get and use. You know, when we talk about the explosion, I mean, I've seen, you know, reports on 60 Minutes about, you know, the growing, you know, industry in terms of Colorado. How are they able to grow and get this? How does that work?
It's the fastest growing industry in the United States, and the United States is behind many countries overseas. People have realized that this is a business. We as healthcare providers are this much of this cannabis world.
Right.
You're talking about, Jimmy, when I started doing these presentations less than two years ago, I had a slide that showed 11 schools in the country that were teaching forms of cannabis. But for example, it might've been a cannabis law class or a cannabis agriculture class, one cannabis healthcare or Vermont and Thomas Jefferson were doing a post-medical certificate on cannabis and healthcare, right? Now you have schools offering full degrees, graduate degrees, and then you can minor and specialize in healthcare, marketing, business, banking, cultivation, agriculture. It is an enormous industry. And I think the pressure of the patients and now the pressure of the industry are going to lead to this being a common normal degree of this next generation of kids coming through,
wow.
Particularly now at a time where most colleges and universities post-COVID are looking to rebrand themselves to survive, this is a very, very attractive degree that will create jobs. And if you look at the jobs right now, think about this. This is really scary, okay? If you're a marathon runner and you want to go buy some running shoes, you go to a running store, right? And what do you hope for? What do you find? You hope that the person fitting you looks like a runner, right? That's a good start.
Right.
And then what do they know? They usually know their own experiences of running and whatever product they sell. Think about that now in the cannabis world. If you go to a dispensary, the person working there, if you use that exact analogy, they know only from their own experiences and what they're selling there. They don't have formal education. So what you're going to and you know their title, by the way, is called bud tenders. Bud tenders. So in the future, you're going to see this whole population of people in the industry become formally educated and hired because there's an enormous job market. And people are starting to realize that now. Because otherwise, you know, you can go anywhere from a 7 to 11 counter and see a sign that says we sell CBD here. And that's the whole, you know, how do I determine between garbage versus real stuff? And one of the things that Jim and I do a lot, again, we teach this, you know, each product that's quality should have a QR code on it. And the QR code you can pull up on your phone, like everyone else knows how to pull up a QR code these days on their phone. And you can actually see what's called a certificate of analysis. And you can see what's in the actual product itself and the batch that it came with. If you pull something up and it has no QR code, you might as well just toss it in the trash. Just give me your money and send it to our non-for-profit and we'll do more. Because you're throwing it out the window. There's no cannabinoids in there. It's junk. That's like the synthetic made in the garage type approach. And it's really important because what you have is, you know, going back to some of the terminology that's really important. If you take the whole plant and you turn it into whether it's a topical cream or it's a tincture, but it's everything in the plant that was put in that formula, we refer to that as what's called full spectrum. You've got the whole spectrum of cannabinoids. If you take all those cannabinoids but only pull out THC, you get all these other cannabinoids minus THC. So you don't need the whole plant to benefit. You can actually have, there's this thing called an entourage effect, where it's the mixture, we don't really understand it yet, but it's the mixture of all these. You might call it like the multivitamin, if you will. And I think down the road, I don't know if it's 5 years, I'm guessing 5 to 7 years, you're going to walk up and down to your pharmacies and CVS and Walgreens, and just like you see a vitamin row, you're going to see a cannabinoid row. You're going to see full spectrum, which is the whole vitamin. You're going to see various forms of multivitamins. And as you know, you can see pure CBD or pure CBN or pure CBG, and that's the equivalent of vitamin C, vitamin D, whatever. And the irony is when people market to you, well, we have the pure CBD, it's actually probably not the best product because you're only getting vitamin C. You really want as many of the cannabinoids as possible. And if you don't want the THC, you can have all the cannabinoids minus that. And, you know, why would you not want that? Well, if you work for UPS and they drug test you, or if you're on the police force or the fire department, they drug test you, again, it's still illegal federally. So your sensitivity level in drug test is anything. If you take a tincture and it's got the smallest amount in, and you could feel like $1 million from taking this, it's still, you run the risk of getting drug tested and losing your job.
Wow.
Yep.
So it sounds like, you know, education and making sure you understand, you know, who's in the sandbox and what you're talking about. Jim, what were you going to add?
Well, it's, you know, back to the industry and related to what Jeff was saying, you know, the CBD component of this industry rose so rapidly and unregulated that there's a couple of studies where they went like 50 different stores and pulled out the CBD products, and it ranged from zero CBDs to more CBDs than was in there, plus THC when they said it was THC free. So the industry kind of on the CBD side grew very unregulated. And so it's important to be able to look for that QR code, look for that third party laboratory analysis, and be able to pull it up and see what's in there. Because the like Jeff was saying, the full spectrum product has a little bit of THC in it. It has less than 0.3%, but that's enough to flag a drug test and make it hot, versus the broad spectrum, which shouldn't have THC in it, but you still have to get that third party analysis to make sure. And the other thing about the industry is that not only has it grown very rapidly, But in states where they've had medical, they just recently passed medical marijuana, or they've recently passed adult use for cannabis, it's an exponential growth of individuals using. And so as a physical therapist, you're going to have patients coming in who are using. It's just like one third of the nation has diabetes. We need to know about diabetes. So we need to know about what does CBD do for the individuals? What is it going to help them with? And how is it related to them getting better and being healthy? And what Jeff was saying, the bud tenders, they're not educated to be actual healthcare providers. If they want to continue to market themselves as being healthy and part of the medical healthcare arena, the education there they need to have an understanding of what are the cannabidiols, what do the cannabinoids do to an individual, and what might they need for their relative condition. You just go back to, I gave a presentation this last weekend, and the top conditions that are being used for, you can't prescribe, but that folks are using it for, related to pain, multiple sclerosis, cancer, epilepsy, post-traumatic stress syndrome, HIV, AIDS, and some of the other neurodegenerative diseases. So those are the top conditions that people are going in for to use CBDs or cannabidiols for. And if you look down that list, 80% of them are related to physical therapy.
It's right at that intersection.
Yeah.
So let's have each of you answer this one. What's the most important thing a physical therapist or physical therapist assistant, since that's our audience, should be doing to educate themselves? Or what's something they definitely need to know if they're going to be interacting with patients who are using these? And, Jeff, you alluded to this earlier, which is number one, you got to be able to ask. This should be somewhere on an intake to make sure that you know, because this is not something someone might just forfeit. They might not think PT would need to know this. But so besides knowing and making sure that you know what your patient is using, what would you guys recommend?
Yeah, so I'll take this first. There's actually a form that's been published in the literature and even since revised called the CUDIT form, which is the Cannabis Use Disorder Screening Tool. It basically has 8 questions. And it is critical that nowadays we add that to our intake of history so we have a good understanding. If you get surgery now, it's one of the mandatory questions they'll ask you if you have THC in your system, whether it's legally or not, because we're learning that individuals who have THC in their system, for example, have a little harder time coming out of recovery on getting off of anesthesia. So it's a common health question now on the front end of screening. And as a physical therapist, you want to know what your patient is using, whether it's THC or other cannabinoids, and how they're using it and when. Why are they using it for? If they're taking something for anxiety and relaxation, and you're taking it at 7 in the morning and your appointment's at 8, and you're wondering why they look so fatigued and relaxed when you're trying to get them to exercise and their heart rate's lower, there's a reason why, right? And so I think it's really critical. There's so many places, Jim and I get so excited about this because there's so many places to get educated. Where do you start? And honestly, when people ask me to do a 1-hour presentation, I go crazy because I can't cover what I want to cover in 1 hour, because I want everybody to know what we know. This is a rapid learning curve, but it's not a difficult learning curve. You just have to sort of open your eyes and your ears and be receptive to the facts and put away whatever you knew in the background of your personal beliefs or what you were taught from the healthcare law system.
Sounds like getting educated. Jim, same question. What's that one thing you definitely want a PT or PTA to know about this?
Well, I want them to know the same thing I teach in pharmacology, that there's no benign substance, and that both THC and CBD have interactions with drugs. They're metabolized by the cytochrome P450 system, like more than most of the drugs are. So there are interactions there, and they need to be aware of that. And I think the other thing that they should do is look at their state practice act. And if it's not clear, call the state board or call your state association's practice act coordinator and ask them, what am I allowed to talk to my patients about related to over-the-counter products or THC? Or, if I can talk to my patients about aspirin and ibuprofen and Tylenol, why can I not talk to them about CBDs? And I think that's important. And we've done that in Arizona, and basically we can.
Yeah. I love the fact that when I asked you guys more research, you guys said PubMed. And when I asked for something that people should educate themselves in terms of professionals, you said your State Practice Act. I mean, those are the basics. Those are the things you should know. So go to the research and go to the law and make sure you're educated.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's so many avenues to educate yourself on relative to this. And one of the things we haven't talked about yet, but it's really important as well, is you can't lose sight of the fact that there are side effects. And when we talk about this, what's healthcare-wise beneficial, it's the cannabinoids. And if THC is involved at all, it's involved in a very low dosage. And dosaging is probably the weakest area where the literature does not support a good understanding of how to dose. And the only reason we've been able to get away with dosages that were sort of like, you know, shooting at the hip from to guess is right, because we don't have the overdose concern. But the fact of the matter is, when you put high amounts of THC in your body, so again, nothing that's coming out of Jim's mouth or mine is advocating for high amounts of THC at any given time. However, individuals that misinterpret this and say, well, this is all bad. The bad comes from, say, for example, short-term use of THC in high frequency. Now we know leads to what's called cannabinoid hyperemesis syndrome, CHS, which is uncontrollable vomiting. And what we see is this started when we were recording it in emergency rooms when states started to allow adult use for recreational use. We saw more and more of it. But here's the crazy thing. The treatment for it is, okay, you get, first they tell you stop smoking tonight. Then they tell you, okay, we're going to give you IV hydration because you've lost a whole lot of fluids. And then they say, go home and take a hot shower. And the next day you feel better. And that's not a deterrent for short-term stopping. So they have multiple violators, return visits to the emergency department, right? Now, what's a bigger concern with this is if this becomes chronic. If you're a chronic user of high amounts of THC, and you particularly vape it or inhale it, and particularly started at a younger age, now you're looking at least we think, studies that show ties to various forms of cancer, mental psychosis, and I don't know if the studies are perfect, but what there's a common denominator. So when we look at individuals that might have testicular cancer later, and we say, okay, tell us about your life, we find that common denominator, you're a chronic smoker of THC from a younger age. And so we're still learning about that because, again, we haven't been able to do really good long-term longitudinal studies relative to this. And as you can imagine, no IRB in their right mind is going to allow us to set one up and follow people and say, okay, we're going to give this group of people a large amount of THC and watch what happens over the course of their life. So our hands are a little bit tied there, but it's not without side effects. I think that's the important thing to recognize. We're advocating for more research to really look at what are all these patients telling us that's working and why are they spending money out of their pocket and throwing away 15 pills. But the science lacks. Not only that, I'll give you an example in Florida. To be a medical provider, to be a physician who's allowed to recommend medical marijuana, all you have to do is take a 2-hour course online.
Wow.
And the course is written by two lawyers. It has nothing to do with healthcare. It has to do with the legalities of it. And so every part of the industry, not just PT, but every part of the industry needs to grow, needs to become standardized so that it has a little bit stronger reputation. And we can separate the facts from the fiction.
Yeah, I like that. I can't believe we've gone 40 minutes and we haven't made one Cheech and Chong reference or High Times. Jim, what were you going to add to that?
That's actually the second or third slide in all of Jeff and I's presentation is you know Cheech and Chong and Woodstock and what this presentation is not about. But Tommy Chong, one of my favorite comedians, anyway. But you know, what Jeff was talking about was definitely related to THC and the side effects of overuse. And then outside of the drug interactions with CBD, because of its metabolism, there's very, very little to show that CBDs have any negative or adverse effects, per se. And so, you know, the CBD products are relatively, let me phrase that. CBD is relatively safe. The products, if they're not third-party tested, you really don't know what you're getting. And that's the danger
right
here in the public.
Yeah. And it's really important to know also that the quality control companies that produce these products, they are advocating for the research because that'll get rid of the bad players in the market. And they're investing their own money of revenues into research and development because they want to show that what they're doing is right and accurate and correct. And unfortunately, there's, you know, because it's not regulated, there's a lot of junk out there. And thank goodness, at least the junk is not dangerous to this point where we've seen, you know, overdoses and other things that were really, really bad. That's not to say it can't happen down the line, because you're seeing, I'm sure, CBD and hemp advertised everything from kinesio tape to toilet paper to hamburgers. And so, you know, we may see that. And hopefully scheduling will change first to allow us to start studying this and get rid of the bad players before the bad players take over and generate revenue at someone else's expense.
Hey, Jimmy, can I want to talk a little bit about a cultural kind of thing that I'm noticing, and that it appears that from a cultural point of view that these cultivars or the new strains of cannabis, if you will, that the higher the THC, the better. And, you know, that can be, the literature really doesn't support that, that the higher the THC, the more intoxicating it's going to be. But going back to what Jeff was calling the entourage effects, which you also will see is called the ensemble effect, that without the CBD and the terpenes and the other components of the plant in the product, you really don't get as good of an overall, if you want to put it in quotes, health effect as you would if it was more of a balanced product. So I want to get the word out there that the higher the THC doesn't mean it's a better product in any way, shape, or form. And so, you know, let's start maybe looking at this culture and changing it to a more balanced THC, CBD, overall profile terpene product that actually has a better benefit or physiological effect on the body.
Yeah, themes always emerge from these episodes that we do. It sounds like education. I mean, this is something we know a little bit about, but you're going to start hearing more and more. And we're going to start hearing things on the street that this is better and this is better. And you're really just advocating for evidence in terms of the science. What does the research tell us? Mm-hmm. Education from the bud tenders to the healthcare providers that are going to be interacting with people who are using these products, you know, whether we want them to or not, but we need to understand their effects and what they're going to do in our patients who are in our care to rehabilitate themselves. So it sounds like education, and we want to know more.
Yeah. And there's one important piece we really haven't touched on. And it's called the endocannabinoid system.
Okay.
This was discovered in the late 80s, 1989, around there in Israel. And so, you know, the majority of us weren't taught this when we took anatomy and physiology classes or pharmacology classes. And so we don't know this system even exists. But the biggest question and probably the most deceptive thoughts that people have, well, how can cannabis cure everything? How come this person here with Crohn's disease says they're better, and this person with a migraine says they're better, and this person here with arthritis says they're better? It's not a magic pill, so therefore we don't believe it, because we all know one thing doesn't cure all. And I couldn't agree, and Jim couldn't agree anymore. What's important to understand is how the endocannabinoid system works, in that all these 100-plus cannabinoids serve different functions. And that's where the science is still evolving. So which ones are neuroprotective agents? Which ones actually allow for pain relief? If you go back to the early days of that Melzack and Wall pain control theory that made us, you know, hated memorizing that, it almost works in a similar manner, where some of the cannabinoids respond to some of the receptors when they bind and they facilitate a euphoric response, and others block a pain response. And as you sit there and you learn through this, it makes so much sense. It's also very analogous to the endocrine system relative to diabetes, for example, with how insulin works. And so if the insulin's not binding, just like if your own endocannabinoids aren't binding, you actually have a condition that's called endocannabinoid deficiency. And that endocannabinoid deficiency leads to symptoms. What are the symptoms? It's different from person to person. But I'll go back to that same example I used at the very beginning, like fibromyalgia. I've not learned anything good yet in science that tells us how we can effectively constantly treat with evidence fibromyalgia. Yet it is one of the most common conditions I hear people say that they have improved with their fibromyalgia using some form of cannabis. And so again, you know, you hear us say this over and over again, there's something out there. We just want to see the research done, because once the schedules change, there will be a flood of money available and a flood of people interested in doing more research. And I'll be the first to shut down PhD420.org if all the research says this is garbage, there's no proof to it. I'm not convinced that'll be the case at this point. But then I don't have an educational platform, and that's okay.
Yeah.
Right now we have an educational platform, and it's really all of our responsibility, all healthcare providers, to be able to speak that language with your patient. You run into two risks. The first risk is you know nothing. I promise you the patient who asks you the question about it is already doing something.
Right.
So if you don't know anything, they know more than you, and that's scary. You lose their trust. The second is if you're just completely shut down and closed off to any form of this, and you tell them, no, I wouldn't put anything in your body, don't try it at all. And again, if they're using it and they're feeling better, all they're looking for is a trusted confidant. And if you don't open the doors and have somewhat of an education, you don't have to know it all. None of us know it all. But we know enough to then look up information and share credible sources with them so that they continue their trust with us as healthcare providers.
Yeah, I love that. Again, we're going to throw that website on the screen, phd420.org. I'd love for people to reach out to you guys and get more educated, especially as we know this is going to continue to progress as the laws change, as you guys alluded to earlier, different laws in different states at different times. You guys ready to do three questions?
Sure.
All right. Three questions brought to you by our friends from Arius Medical Staffing, the leaders in hashtag travel physical therapy. If you're looking to travel about the country, we all did like clinical rotations, right? What if you could get paid as a licensed physical therapist for a clinical rotation? That's what travel physical therapy is. And a lot of times people just think, well, outpatient ortho, that's all travel PT is. No, all settings, all 50 states plus DC. So see what is out there. You're an essential employee. They've said it right now, even during COVID. There are people that need your care. Find out where they need that. And just find what you think is a great place to live. And some people use this as a test drive. They want to move to the Pacific Northwest. Well, get paid to go and test it out for a couple months. If it doesn't work out, you found that out. AURUSmedical.com. That is AURUSmedical.com. Let's do three questions. So first question is a where question. We'll start with Jim. You're out in Arizona. If you get carte blanche, you go anywhere in the U.S. to do what you do, where else would you want to go?
Oh, I'm going up to somewhere near Kalispell, Wyoming, near Flathead Lake.
Yeah.
Oh, gorgeous, beautiful up there. Fishing, hunting, hiking. That's my prime location if I'm going somewhere.
All right. Jeff is in Florida. Where else would you go?
Key West.
Yeah, why not? Right. Mile marker zero.
South or bust.
Yeah. All right. Second question is a what question, Jim. What's something you've watched or read or listened to, a book, a movie, podcast, something you'd suggest that would give value to the audience?
Oh, that's interesting. I'm gonna have to pass on that one, Jim. Right. I can't think of anything right off the bat. Forgot what I wrote too, by the way. So
So this is like a softball you threw at me. So my favorite book of all time is called Five Dysfunctions of a Team. It's written by Patrick Lencioni. It's about getting people to work together. And the two foundations of the five are trust and communication. And those are things we talked about in this last hour relative to the provider-patient relationship.
Yeah, it comes down to communication, right? All right. Third question is a who question. I love how it begins and ends with people. Who's someone the audience should know more about? I on purpose asked this really open-ended. Just someone who you think the audience could get value from learning from.
I think I put in there. Hang on. Dr. Martha Rosenthal. And she's the one that Jeff kind of connected me with her, and I took the cannabis professional class from. And you know, she's written books on drug use and sexual preferences and stuff. And she's just a really knowledgeable neuropsychologist, neurobiologist. And she gets paid, like she says, to teach about drugs and sex. What a job! I was really impressed with her. But on this topic, if you want to get to know somebody, I would say go with her.
Sounds good. All right, Jeff, who's your who?
You know, I don't remember what I submitted as a who, so I'm just going to go with Jim Ferriss. And here's the reason. You just don't know what topics in the world are going to connect you with other people. And the first day, you know, this is a topic where people are in the closet. A lot of them don't want to talk about. And when Jim approached me about it, it was almost like, wow, you're interested in this also? And then we've connected, we've clicked, we've become closer friends, and we have the same passion. And so, you know, Jim is my guy that I like learning more from, but reach out to people who you don't know and get to know them. And you just never know. We get caught up in celebrityism, but oftentimes it's the people behind the scenes that really have a lot to offer.
Yeah, that's why we ask this question and never say like this person has to have a social media following or anything like that. I usually like when people mention people who are under the radar. So appreciate those. Last thing we do on the show is called the parting shot. Parting Shot is brought to you by our friends at the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Find them online at orthopt.org. I know a lot of people thinking about using some time around COVID to level up their game and maybe take that OCS. Great OCS prep course, Current Concepts of Orthopedic Physical Therapy, created by the Academy of Orthopedic Physical Therapy. Seems like a pretty good place to start with the leaders. So find them online at orthopt.org. They have some other course listings as well, some recent ones, tissue tolerance, the running athlete. So see what they have to offer. Again, that website, orthopt.org. Parting shot, your last chance for kind of like the mic drop moment. What do you want to leave with the audience as we wrap up this episode? We'll start with Jim.
So I think I would parting shot that try to get rid of this, try to help get rid of the stigma of cannabis. I think it's been given a bad rap. I think there's a potential out there for quite a bit of that. And don't be afraid to get into it and ask. And cannabis is not just THC. There's much more to it than that.
I love that. All right, Jeff, your parting shot. What do you got for us?
My parting shot is to look for the donut, not the hole. There's so much adversity and negativity in the world around us today, yet there's so much positive as well. And even from adverse things that happen in our lives, positive things come out of it. If you look for the hole, you spend a lot of negative energy chasing it down, and you'll probably find it. Instead, seek the donut. It tastes better. It looks better. And it usually leads to a better outcome.
I like the fact that your parting shot on the show has to do with something that a munchie, really. It's that you would come up maybe after using some of these products. And appreciate the insight. Just a brief glimpse, because I think there's a lot more that we need to learn as a profession, as providers in this area. Appreciate your time, guys. Thanks for talking with us.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Love the PT Pinecast?
Yes. Yes.
Support the show by telling a friend or by leaving a review on iTunes or Google Play.
All right. Show today brought to you by the Brooks Institute of Higher Learning, an innovator in providing advanced post-professional education. Brooks IHL offering continuing education courses in numerous specialty areas, 6 PT residency programs, an OMPT fellowship, as well as challenging but rewarding internships. The IHL specializes in the translation of information from evidence to patient management. Learn what they can do for you to support your professional development at brooksihl.org. Our home on the internet.
ptpintcast.com.
Created by Build PT. Build PT provides marketing services specifically for private practice PTs.
From website development and hosting,
providing content marketing solutions
for PT clinics across the country.
See what Build PT can do for you today
at buildpt.com.
The PT Pinecast is a product of PT Pinecast LLC.
It's poured fresh by me,
physical therapist Jimmy McKay.
Ingredients are sourced by our chief connections officer,
Sky Donovan from Marymount University.
And it's brewed fresh by producer and physical therapist
Juliet Dassinger.
And by producer and creator, second-year PT student
Bridget Nolan from Sacred Heart University.
PT Pintcast is a podcast that saves physical therapists from missing out on amazing insight, remarkable ideas, and motivational stories.
Make sure to follow us online
at PT Pintcast and
subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts.
I absolutely love
you. I love you, love you, love you.
It's awesome.
Thanks so much for listening. And if you found value in the show, all we ask
is that you tell a friend.
This has been another pour from the PT Pinecast. The PT Pinecast is intended for educational purposes only. No clinical decision-making should be based solely on one source. While care is taken to ensure accuracy, factual errors can be present. More on the show at ptpinecast.com.